So tonight we're in Proverbs chapter 4, and we're going to actually look at the whole chapter this evening. I'm very excited to start here. We change topics and we look at all the bad things that we can get caught up in too. And as we talked about that several weeks ago, it was the adulterous woman, and what we really related that to is all of temptation. What does temptation look like, and how does temptation look and feel, and how does it work? So that begins a conversation next week. But this week, we're going to talk about the protections that God gives to us, and we're going to look at starting in chapter 4, verse 1. Now, if anyone who's willing to read verses 1 through 4. Okay, please.
These are my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you a good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. God is my father's son, tender, and the only one on the side of my mother. He also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my word.
Okay, so to set the stage of what we're talking about tonight, Solomon is talking to the boys, and he says, my dad said this to me. That's where we are, right? So we're going to pay attention to what King David said to Solomon, or the way our daughter sometimes says it, hey, Papa says, do it this way. Papa says, maybe we ought to do it this way. And in my grandson's eyes, Papa can't do anything wrong. He'll learn. Papa can't fix everything, right? But he thinks I can right now. And since this is kind of the same way that Solomon is beginning this, he goes, boys, Anne is here. You want to help her? He says, boys, let's listen to what Grandpa has to say. Okay? That's what we're starting with here. So in verse 5, he starts and he says, get wisdom, get understanding. Does someone have a King James Bible? A new King James Bible? NIV? Whatever it is? Amplified? Yep. Hit that. What does that verse say? What does the start of that verse say?
Get wisdom.
Get wisdom. Okay. What?
Acquire.
Someone else? Something different?
Why does it have to be wisdom, get understanding?
Okay. Get wisdom, get understanding. I'm reading out of, evidently, and I found this out the other day, this is the 1985 version of the New International Version, okay? The 2000 version of the New International says this. I just lost it. So it says this. The beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. And so for us to understand what's really happening here, Solomon's telling a dad joke. Can anyone tell me what the beginning of watching TV is?
Watching TV.
There you go. Right. The beginning of taking a drink of water is? Getting a drink. The beginning of wisdom is? Get wisdom. So Solomon says, look, if you want to be wise, then you need to get wisdom. Right? We're going to come back and look at these verses a little bit differently. Yes?
When you acquire wisdom, acquire understanding.
Yes. Good.
Get wisdom, get wisdom. What did your guy say? Get wisdom, get understanding.
Yeah, it says get wisdom, get understanding.
Mine says get wisdom, develop good understanding.
Good. That's another good way to interpret that. So this whole idea of understanding, remember our equation, the fear of God plus knowledge plus understanding equals wisdom, right? That's what Solomon laid out for us. And then we did these substitution words. We said Jesus is a relationship with God plus the truth that he reveals to us. And when we obey that, we have this relationship with Jesus, and we can take this and say, wisdom is Jesus, right? We can replace those words in the book of Proverbs. We can replace the word wisdom with Jesus. And at the very end of our conversation tonight, we're going to look at these few verses here in verses 5 through 7. Or, 5 through 9. But we're going to read through them right now and just look at them from wisdom's point of view. But I just wanted to kind of point that out, that Solomon's kind of telling a bad joke. In the new versions, he says to get wisdom, or to, in the beginning of wisdom is to get wisdom, right? And get understanding. He says, and do not forget my words or swerve from them. What does that mean, to swerve? Dodge.
Away.
What?
Turn away.
Turn away. Swerve. Turn away. Dodge. Okay. And he says, then in verse 6, he says, do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over her. So we find that we have this security when we're wise, right? When we do wise things, we can have security in what we're doing. If we're doing something wise, which means that it's from God, it's truth, we're obeying, it's wise to do, that means we can have security in what we're doing, right? Eternal security, security in what we're, in our thought process. Next, we lay into wisdom is supreme. It is above all, and therefore get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding. Esteem her. What's another word there? I think in the King James it says, instead of esteem her, it says
cherish.
Right. So what does that bring to mind when you're cherishing something?
Very appreciative.
Right. Very appreciative. Cherish her and she will exalt you. Embrace her or give her a hug and she will honor you. Often, we give our moms hugs, don't we? We have to. We're required to. Moms don't let us not give her a hug, right? But when we give her that hug, we're honoring her, but also she honors us, doesn't she? At least that's what my mom does. And if you don't have a hug, you need a hug, mom will give you the hug back. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Or this idea that wisdom creates this opportunity for beauty too. A beautiful relationship, a beautiful opportunity. So then Solomon says, listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. And I don't really think that he's saying that we're going to have long life, although if we do the things of God and we don't make bad choices, our life does get a little bit longer and it extends to the length that God would like for us to be here. But it also says there's an awful lot of great life in those years, right? When we are living within the boundaries of the freedoms that God has given to us, we have great opportunities and great freedoms, and we can enjoy a lot more, and we won't be wasting our time in things that are just, that they don't matter, right? I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered, and when you run, you will not stumble. So hold on to instruction and do not let go. Guard it well with all your life. Then it has this idea that it says, do not set your foot in the path of wicked or walk in the way of evil men. So we are to guard against doing the wrong things. We're supposed to make good decisions. We're supposed to not dangle our toes in the pond of crazy. right? We all have decisions that we can make. We can make good decisions or we can make bad decisions. We can choose poorly or we can choose wisely. Choosing poorly, sometimes the idea is, if I can get just this close, it's not going to hurt. I'm not touching the stove yet. Barely. There's a little heat there, but I'm not touching it, so I'm not going to get burned, right? There's a classic example. I think Pastor Nate used it a couple weeks ago in church. I'm going to repeat it. The idea is, how close to temptation do you want to be? Okay? So there was a gentleman who lived on the top of a hill. And this was back in the day of horse and buggies, right? And he put out an ad in the paper and he said, I need a driver to take my son to school every day. Okay. Come to the house on Saturday. We'll go through an interview process and we'll take it from there. So he gets in the car, or they get in the buggy and the horse and all this, and he goes up the hill, and there's three guys up there. He goes, okay. He says, my son loves going fast, and he loves looking over the edge of the cliff. So, who's first? You're first. All right, let's take hop up in here. Let's get the driver going. She gets on, whips the horse as hard as she could, grabs the reins, and off they go. Running right down the middle of the road. There's 3 feet over here and 3 feet over here, and he is doing drifting down the corners and coming down the switchbacks and making it all exciting. Big dust clouds rolling. Gets down to the end of the hill, and the father says, "Yeah, good job. Go back up." They go back up. They're drifting. They're swaying. They're swerving. They're moving all over the road, fast as they could possibly go. Gets up to the top, and everybody looks and says, "Wow, you made it in 10 minutes. That's amazing." Anybody can do faster? Anybody do better? Who's next? Bethany. She grabs the reins, she grabs the whip, she goes. She doesn't drive near as fast, but she's 3 inches from the edge. And she's running that horse as fast as possible. So the father's looking over the edge and he can see. She gets all the way down to the hill. The father goes, "Wow, that was close. Yeah, wasn't that neat? Mm-hmm. Do it again. Go up." They go up, and he's on this side, looking over the hill, looking down at the ravine. Gets up. He goes, "Now, I want you to stand over here, and anybody who thinks they can beat his time, stand over here with the guy who went first." Okay, so there's a bunch of guys who went over. And then there's a bunch of guys over here that think they can get a little bit closer and a little bit faster. There's one guy standing left. He goes, "Okay, how about you? We're going to do time trials with them. You get up." Aaron grabs the reins, and this is Aaron. Yeah. What's he doing? He's riding on the inside of the wall. All the way over here. There's 6 feet to the edge of the cliff. They're just poking along, rolling down the hill. Gets down to the end of the hill, and the father looks at him and says, "That took quite a while. Go back up." Aaron goes, "Okay." Turns around, he rolls it back up, all the way up to the hill. Gets up there, everybody's laughing. It took him 35 minutes to get to the top. Down and back, 35 minutes. Like, he certainly doesn't have a job, right? Father gets out of the buggy and says, "Y'all go home, he's got the job." Right? Why is that? Why did he get the job? He was going to do protection. He was going to protect the son. He was safer. He did it smart. He didn't go near the edge. He stayed away. He didn't run to the middle and kind of tempt himself to go to the edge. He didn't go as fast as possible to drift a little bit closer to the edge. Nope. He stayed on the inside lane and just walked. That's what God is asking us to do as we go through this book. And especially here, where it says that we are to hold on to instruction, don't let go, guard it well with all your life, and don't set your foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evil men. Verse 15, it says, avoid it, don't travel it, turn from it, and go on your way. So just like the third guy who got in the buggy, here's the edge. Let's stay way over here on the inside. Stay away from that, right? Don't even allow yourself the opportunity to be tempted there, right? That's what we're being instructed. And why is he saying that? So in verse 16 is the why. And we're talking about these wicked ways, right? The wickedness. He says, for they cannot sleep till they do evil. They are robbed of slumber until they make someone fall. In other words, the folks that were up there on the hill laughing and smarting off and making fun of and driving as close to the edge as possible in our example, right? It's going to break down here in a minute, but in our example, they're running as close to the edge as possible. What happens? They have no peace. When we choose to do things that God doesn't want us to do, we don't sleep. We don't sleep well. We don't sleep restfully. We toss and we turn. We constantly mull it over. What this is saying is they don't even get rest. They have to do something bad so that they feel like their day is complete. And as I was reading and studying and reading through the commentaries, one of the examples was, you know, we in Hebrews, we talked about this idea that we have a physical life, we have our emotional life, and we have a spiritual life. And those who don't embrace that spiritual life, they have a hole, and they have to fill it with something. Our natural body needs to fill that hole. God has written that onto our heart. We are physically going to do things. We're going to emotionally feel things. But spiritually, we are incomplete unless we have that relationship with God. And when we don't fill it with godly things, it has to be filled with something. And we don't have any peace until we fill it with something that's just not there, right? It's not valuable. It's not wise. It's not good for us. It's the temptation that we're going to be talking about in the next three chapters. It's the temptations that come along. Verse 17, it says, they eat the bread of wickedness, and they drink the wine of violence. So, two questions. Is there a loaf of bread that we know of as wickedness? And is there a cup of wine known as violence? Physically, that we drink and eat? No. So, what does it say?
They enjoy it. This is a filling for them.
It's what they live off of. It's everything that they have to fill that hole with, right? So in verse 18, it says, the path of righteousness is like the first gleam of dawn, shining over ever brighter to the full light of the day. Someone answer the riddle there. Why is that so important afterwards? After we talk about this whole idea of they have to get their fill on all this wickedness and all their stuff, and we're contrasting that with the path of the righteous. But it's not really a gleamy, bright light, right? Let me give you an example. I enjoy hunting. I will not tell a hunting story tonight. What I am going to tell you are the things that happen leading up to the hunt. In just a few more verses, we're going to talk about the darkness and stumbling. In fact, that's the next verse. It talks about being in the dark. When I go out to my hunting stand in November and December, the sun is down, it's not bright, hopefully there's a moon out, and I can maybe make my way through the woods. Otherwise, I'm tripping over stumps, and I'm tripping over the things that fell the day before because my path isn't clear. I have to look for shapes a V tree, and then I turn left, and then I feel like I'm walking uphill, then I have to stop, turn around, and walk over here, and then I can go up my stand, right? Because right there's the fence line. At nighttime, I have to do that when it's dark, and I'm stumbling all over the place because I refuse to bring the flashlight because it's just something else to carry. So that's my own problem, right? I should maybe bring a flashlight. But the whole idea of this dawn, the righteous path is like the gleaming light of the dawn. 30 minutes, and it doesn't matter whether the sun rises at 7:31 or the sun rises at 7:35 or the sun rises at 7:42. Almost invariably, 30 minutes before, squirrels start jumping around in the woods. They start making some noise. And just a little while later, the birds begin to sing, about 10 minutes later. And then all of a sudden, when the sun comes up and it's still dusk and dark, you feel like that's the actual moment that the sun rises. It's 7:41 or 7:31 or whatever that time is. There's just this haze over everything, and the woods are alive. But the sun comes up slowly. The path of the righteous is nothing more than one step at a time. It's a slow walk. We don't get inundated with, hey, be bright! Not right away. We start our relationship, we start our walk with Christ, and it's a slow walk. Hey, I got saved. I told my story. Hey, I got saved, and this is what I'm doing now. It's getting a little brighter. Hey, I'm going to tell 135 people I got saved. My life changed. What? May I pick on you?
Sure.
Scooby didn't do that yesterday. He started this journey back here. And it was one day at a time, and it got brighter. It got brighter. It got brighter. It got brighter. It got louder. He got more courage. He got to see. That is what Solomon is telling us that we need to do when we are guarding our heart and looking at Christ and embracing this whole idea of wisdom. We are just taking one step and it gets brighter, more, more, and more, right? So the verse that I talked about, verse 19, it says, but the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They don't know what makes them stumble. So we want to be on that path of righteousness, right? We don't want to be stumbling around in the woods because Tim didn't bring a flashlight. It's just more to carry, and I'm tired of carrying things. We want to take that walk through righteousness. So here's where we're going to look at how we obey and guard our heart. Verse 20, it says, my son, pay attention to what I'm saying. Listen to the words. Listen closely. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are the life to those who find them, and health to a man's whole body. And above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Last week we saw that wisdom is the tree of life, right? It's this whole idea that wisdom is the wellspring of life. Remembering that wisdom is Jesus. Jesus is our wellspring. He is this idea of wellspring is this spring that just, we would call it an artesian well, right? It's just a natural spring that just keeps on coming, keeps on giving more and more water, more and more. Why do we have to write all these things? Why do we have to protect them? What's in our heart? Because what I dwell on in my heart is what I choose to look at. What I dwell on in my heart is what I choose to hear. What I dwell on in my heart is what I choose to say. And what I dwell on in my heart, I choose to touch. And what I dwell on in my heart is where my feet start to walk. God says, or Solomon says, guard your heart, watch your eyes, watch your ears, watch what you say, watch where your hands are going, watch where your feet are going. You want to stay on this path of righteousness. It affects your entire body. And above all else, verse 23, it says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. 24, put away the perversity from your mouth, keep the corrupt talk from your lips. What's the difference between our mouth and our lips? You are a nurse. What's the difference between your mouth and a nurse and your lips?
Well, I guess your lips form words.
Mm-hmm. The lips can, on the outside, right? It's whole, this whole idea of getting close. So my mouth, I can take it all in, I can chew it all up, I can talk real loud, but my lips can get even closer. They're on the outside, right? It's this idea of they're closer. Don't even let them come to your lips. Don't let those words, think about here, not even leave them in my mouth. Don't let them come here, right on the edge. I struggle with that, especially if you're riding in the car with me and we're on 465. I struggle with that. I don't know anybody who doesn't. But Solomon says, don't even let them touch your lips. Don't go to the outside. He says, let your eyes look straight ahead and fix your gaze directly before you. Make level paths for your feet and take only ways that are firm. That's a good lesson. The whole idea, my brother and I used to mow grass, and one of the signature items that was about, you could tell that an Underwood mowed the grass. Everywhere. It didn't matter what the house looked like, didn't matter what the yard looked like, there were straight lines. And how do you get a straight line? Well, you line up your tractor, however it's supposed to be, or your push mower, and you look straight ahead. Alright, so I'm going to walk down the aisle here. I found the spot that I want to look at, and I'm on the tractor, and I'm watching. Now I'm walking. In just a minute, it's going to say, don't look to your left. Oh, that's my right. Don't look to your right. Don't look to your left. Why? Because you get off track. And then, oh, I'm back on track. And then you look back, and you've got this wavy line.
That's how I'm on the yard.
Wavy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Try looking straight ahead. Right? Nice straight lines. The idea is, what are we looking at? In our text, what's Solomon say we need to look at? What's our God, what does our gaze need to be fixed on? On structure, on God, on instruction, on the things that are wise. And then verse 27 says, don't swerve to the right or left. Keep your foot from evil. I wrote in my Bible, this idea of don't get cute. You know what I mean by that? Don't get cute. You ever seen somebody running down the road or driving down the road? All of a sudden, the car goes swerves left, right, left, right, left, right. Oops. Left, right, left. You've seen the cars do that, right? When you're in high school, it was only when you were in high school. Nobody does it when they're an adult. Right. Right? Solomon says, don't get cute. Just keep your eyes focused. Don't go over here. Don't go over there. Don't try to touch it. Don't go over here. So I want to take this last section that we've looked at, verses 20 through 27, and I would like to compare this, and we won't jump back and forth, but I would like for you to remember what we've just talked about. And I want us to look at what Grandpa David said. Grandpa King David, what did he say about this? And I put it that way because often we don't focus on the fact that we're looking at three-generation conversation here. King David spoke to Solomon, who spoke to his son. Crystal and I instructed the girls. They're going to instruct their children. And someday they might actually say, what those children, those grandchildren may look and say, what did Grandpa and Grandma used to say? What did Papa and Mama say? What do they say about that? Sometimes the girls ask me, well, how did Grandma and Grandpa deal with these situations? Well, when I was a kid, we did it this way. Grandpa and Grandma said it to do it this way, and that's the way we did it. It didn't matter, right? Everyone's always curious. So let's turn back to Psalms chapter 1. Psalms is the book just previous to Proverbs. And there's only 6 short verses. And I want to listen to what King David says and what he's written down and what Solomon has the opportunity to read because David's written it. And this is what I think, this is some of the conversation that we just read in Psalms or Proverbs chapter 4. Comes right out of this Psalms chapter 1. If we just read and listen, it says, blessed or happy is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. We've seen that word mockers before in Proverbs, haven't we? But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on the law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water. We've seen that, haven't we? Which yields its fruit in the season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does, he prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like the chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked shall perish. Doesn't that sound much like what Solomon is telling us in chapter 4 here? Not word for word, but it's certainly in the instruction that Solomon's leaning on to give us a little bit of guidance, right? And what this wisdom looks like. I told you we were going to go back to verses 5 through 9. And as we kind of wrap this up, 5 through 9 reads this way. Replacing the word Jesus, replacing the word wisdom with Jesus, and replacing the word she with he, because Jesus was a man, is a man. Verse 5, King David said, using personification of the subjects, right? Here we go. Get Jesus. Or the beginning of getting Jesus is get Jesus. When we look up here, it says, get Jesus. And we said, understanding is obedience. He says, get wisdom or get Jesus and get and be obedient. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake Jesus, and he will protect you. Love him, and he will watch over you. Jesus is supreme. Therefore, get Jesus. Though it costs all you have, be obedient. Cherish him, and he will exalt you. Embrace him, hug him, cling to him, and he will honor you. He will be a garland of grace upon your head. He will set a garland of grace upon your head and present you with a crown of beauty. I think Solomon's picture of Jesus was pretty accurate. Solomon's picture of wisdom is very accurate. And when we read the Proverbs and begin looking at wisdom as Jesus, like the New Testament says, Jesus was the embodiment of the Old Testament, specifically here in Proverbs. What a picture, what an opportunity, what a delightful promise we have reading through this book. And I hope it encourages us and causes us to change our life and to continue in that process of growth. Thoughts? Questions? Heavenly Father, Lord, we do love you. And we thank you very much for the evening that we have had to come and listen to your word. And Lord, I pray that you would allow me to grow. Allow us to grow in your word. Help us to see you as a reality. Help us to create change in our own life and allow others to see it. Lord, we do pray that we would be cherishing you, we would cling to you, and that we would lay our hope in you.